Hello, and welcome to Restoration. This podcast is a wonderful teaching by Dave James called The Recipe. We'll give you great insight into God's plan for healing through the 12 steps. Thanks for joining us.
Hi, everybody. My name is Dave, and I am a believer who struggles with everything I used to drink over. And I say that God delivered me from the obsession and compulsion to drink alcohol about 14 years ago, coming up on 14 years. But I still struggle daily with, every temptation, you know. And as Paul writes, there's no temptation that's not common to man, but I seem to struggle with them all. The name of the teaching is The Recipe. I'm going to do kind of an overview of the steps as compared to a recipe, and we'll get into that in a minute. But from the very beginning, God uses man's, you know, basic need and desire for food to talk about, to teach us about sin and temptation and brokenness, and you know, all the way back to the Adam, the Garden of Eden. And the apple. And, you know, a lot of times, I think when we, when we're new believers or when we're first coming to church and kind of kicking the tires and trying to really understand this, you know, it seems kind of far-fetched to be asked to believe in a garden and a snake and an apple and, you know, being swallowed by a whale or a bunch of animals on an ark, you know. And if, you know, that's where you are, that's fine. God's big enough to handle your doubts and your questions. But, a mere 1,800 years before Christ was born, and absolutely verifiable by three major religions and being able to trace their ancestry, there was a man named Abraham. And Abraham is, you know, the father of three major religions. And God promised him a great nation would come from him. And it did. And there's no doubt about that, that Abraham was absolute fact, was man, walked on the earth. And Abraham had several kids, and I won't get into that, but one of them was Isaac. And Isaac had two sons, Esau and Jacob. And in Genesis 25, the last four or five verses of Genesis 25, it talks about how Esau, who was a hunter, and he was kind of a macho, manly man, and Jacob was more of a stay-at-home-with-his-mom kind of guy. But Esau came home one day, hungry and famished, and he asked Jacob for a bowl of stew. He said, "Give me a bowl of that stew. I am starving." And Jacob said, "Sell me your birthright." And Esau said, "What good is my birthright if I'm going to die from starvation?" That's kind of dramatic, isn't it? I'm going to die from starvation. I have to have it right now. So Jacob said, "You know, swear to me your birthright," and Esau did. Now, if you think about it, that's probably the most expensive recipe of food ever in the world. Okay, if you think about everywhere in the Bible, it says over and over, dozens of times, "I, the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob." Well, just imagine taking a line and scratching out Jacob and putting Esau. I mean, Abraham at that time was one of the most wealthy, if not the most wealthy man in the world. And Esau gave all that inheritance, all that legacy, all that future up for instant gratification for a bowl of stew right now. So, you know, to me, that just sums up the nature of addiction and the nature of need. Because it wasn't about the stew. It was about the passion and the desire for being satisfied instantly right now. And, you know, it doesn't matter if it's food or if it's booze or if it's drugs or if it's sex or if it's gambling or if it's pornography or it's controlling other people, you know, or whatever it is, or it's spending. You know, it's not about the behavior or the substance. It's about the misdirected passion, you know, that I need to be satisfied right now. I want what I want right this moment. And, you know, that's really the nature of addiction. And if you can relate to that at all, then, you know, that's what the 12 steps are for. It's a way for us to break that cycle of satisfying our own needs and our own wants and our own greed and our own lust and our own, you know, our own passion and need in such a way to self-comfort us and to find a spiritual experience through working the 12 steps. And does everybody have a handout? Okay. Well, let's look at the top with the with this first part is the cake ingredients. Now, you know, if I take this tried and true recipe, this is like a blue ribbon multiple county fair winning top of the line chocolate cake recipe. I mean, it's just absolutely delicious. Okay. And, you know, it has a list of ingredients here, right? And, you know, if I follow those directions, you know, exactly as they're written, you know, if I do exactly what I'm supposed to do, if I follow them in order and I read it through and I plan it out and I, you know, read the directions, gather the ingredients and follow the directions, there is no doubt at all that I am going to end up with a chocolate cake. It's a no-brainer. If I do these things in order, in the way that they're described, I'm going to end up with a chocolate cake. It's not a theory. It's not a, you might get a cake. It might work for you, you know. But, you know, what happens if I go, okay, eggs, where's eggs on here? Oh, man, I'm out of eggs. Well, I'll just add more oil. So, well, that'll work. I forgot the salt. I'll just, you know, 2 cups of sugar. Well, all I got's confectioner. Well, that'll probably work. You know, it shouldn't matter. It'll work. You know, and I kind of just beat this up and I pour it in here and, you know, I read, oh, grease and flour to the pan. Gosh, I'm not really a baker. I've never done baking before, so grease, I guess I've got some of that axle grease in the garage, you know, if I put some of that in there. And, you know, the chances that I'm going to end up with an edible cake are slim to none, you know, and I think Slim left the building, you know. So, you know, if I follow this, and by the way, if any of y'all do bake, I encourage you to make one of these and bring it up here, you know. I'm not much of a baker. But this is just a fabulous recipe, you know. It really is. And this recipe also assumes that I have certain tools. It assumes that I have bowls and measuring cups and pans and an oven and that I know what the terms mean, you know, that I know what, you know, preheating means and all that kind of stuff. But let's say that I've never tried baking at all before. In fact, I never really went into the kitchen. You know, now what if I had somebody, you know, instead of me just going in there and trying to muddle my way through and kind of guess what these different things were, what if I had somebody who'd made this cake over and over again, who'd made this cake multiple times at county fairs and had won blue ribbons and they made it for birthdays and they made it 2 or 3 times during the holidays. Man, they had perfected this cake and they were going to take the time to help me make it. It'd probably increase the chances of it turning out pretty good, don't you think? Okay, well, I really believe that on the bottom half of this is the ingredients for recovery. And I really believe that the 12 steps are a recipe for a spiritual awakening. That if you follow these directions as they're written with the help of a sponsor, step by step, to the best of your ability, the end result is having a spiritual awakening. The end result is to dispel. Actually, you know, one of the things I like the very best is it comes out of this book here. This is one of the original books published for doing the 12 steps. And at the very beginning on step one, it talks about, now I can't, you're not going to be able to find it, huh? AA's 12 steps are a group of principles, spiritual in nature, that when practiced as a way of life, dispel the obsession towards addiction and render the sufferer useful, happy, and whole. You know, now who doesn't want to be useful, happy, and whole? Does anybody want to be useless, unhappy, and incomplete? Well, no, right? So, I mean, this is a roadmap or a plan. If you look at the basic ingredients for the ingredients for basic recovery, there's a list there, and the first thing to have to start this journey is you have to have a safe 12-step support group. We have those here on Tuesday nights, and we have them here on Thursday nights as well. You know, it's a safe place where you can meet with other people who share the same problem you have, and it doesn't matter what that problem is. It doesn't matter if it's anger or if it's purity issues, if it's alcohol, if it's drugs, if it's it doesn't really matter, as long as you find a group of people who can say, "Hey, I've been there and done that." 2 to 3 meetings a week. Oh, all right, we got the right slide up and everything. I didn't even say the right thing. Thanks, Tracy. 2 to 3 meetings a week. A sponsor who has worked all 12 steps and has had a spiritual awakening. Can I get a raise of hands of people who've worked all 12 steps and have actually done this? Y'all look around at all the hands that are up. These are the people who've done this work. These are the people who understand this and can guide you through it. Just like I wouldn't try to bake this cake if I knew absolutely nothing about baking without somebody to explain to me how to use an electric mixer or, you know, preheat an oven. A couple of accountability partners that you can trust and be honest with and are working the steps on same or similar issues. You know, an accountability partner is just a friend, man. It's just somebody who, you know, you can pick up the telephone and you can call them and say, "Hey, I'm having a bad day." Or you could be having a good day and you can pick up the phone and call them and go, "Hey, man, I was just thinking about you. How are you doing? You know, are you doing all right?" And 5 to 10 phone numbers. And this is, you know, loose guidelines, but, you know, it's so important to be connected. It's so important to be immersed. I'm going to use a lot of analogies, and one of them is working out. You know, if you think you can actually buy that thing on TV that says lose 40 pounds in a month with no diet and no exercise, or just 6 minutes a day with the shake thing is going to make you look like this buff bodybuilder. You know, if you're really buying that, you're deluding yourself. You know, you're in delusion. And if you really think that you can come to one meeting a week and not really participate and not get any phone numbers and not get any literature and not get a sponsor and not do any written work, you know, it's just like fooling yourself. You're not going to get the results if you don't do the effort, you know. The 4CR workbooks, these are available on that back table. And I'm not a salesman. I am not telling you guys to run out and buy all this stuff. You can buy one at a time. In fact, it's suggested that you start with Participant Guide 1 and get the first step. And we will be having some step studies that are starting here. These are just a real cool way to work the 12 steps in a Christ-based program. It's got scripture verses that back up, that go along, room to write your questions and everything. And these 4 participant guides for working the steps with the sponsor. A notebook or a journal, I'm into the gear. You know, I like the leather-bound, really cool journal, you know, but something that, you know, you can sit and get into and write stuff down each day. This is one that I've been working on not very long now, but and I don't, you know, journal every day, but really, really important. Critical to have is a Bible that you can understand, you know, to go along with this recovery. This is really cool. And if you go to some of the ritzy meetings in other parts of towns, they might give you one. They did me. You know, that was pretty cool. They go, "Do you have a recovery Bible?" I go, "I got a lot of Bibles." They said, "Yeah, but do you have a recovery Bible?" And I said, "No." So they gave me one. I thought that was really cool. So this goes along with the participant guides, and that's really it's really eye-opening. It's got some awesome stories in there. For me and It's absolutely critical for me to have some daily quiet time with God, and I find it easiest to do with one of these. I've got so many of them. Some of these are like, you know, this one's been around forever, My Utmost for His Highest. And then, you know, others, Courage to Change. But these are all biblical-based meditations. Just to spend, you know, 15 to 30 minutes a day just reading that, you know, and you think, gosh, where am I going to find 15 to 30 minutes? I don't know, man. If you were like me, I found 4 hours a day to drink, you know? You know, I've managed to spend 6 hours looking at porn on a computer, you know? Where am I going to find 15 minutes? Come on, you know? And I mean, you know, that's just like, it's about what you're willing to put into it. And the most important things are honesty, willingness, and an open mind. You know, I went to my first 12-step meeting, and I sat in the back, and I put my arms across my chest, and I looked at everybody, and I was younger and smarter and more unique, and I thought I was, you know, better looking and had a brighter future, and I wasn't like you people, you know. And 12 years later, or 10 and a half years later, I came in and I was dumber and uglier and just like all you people and real, real willing to do this work, you know. And I spent 10 years out there trying to do it my way, you know. Ingredients another thing at the bottom of that basic recovery ingredients is some type of service commitment. Now, a lot of you people who have been like people pleasers and Al-Anons and stuff are going, oh, I knew they were going to rope me into making cakes and doing all kinds of stuff. If that's you and you've always done that kind of stuff, your service commitment can be showing up to be served. That would be awesome. But if you're like me, alcoholic addict kind of thing, it's so important for me to take ownership of my group and to be a part of and just to give back. And I'm not talking about a huge commitment or financial. I'm just talking about maybe my job is to set the chairs in the circle before the meeting. You know, maybe my service commitment is just to show up 10 minutes early and shake hands with people as they're walking in, you know, or helping to pass the baskets or pass the handouts out. You know, I mean, just something that makes it this group a part of me gives me some ownership. And instead of feeling like I'm an outsider and like, you know, maybe it's my, you know, first or second time there and kind of sitting out on the outside and thinking I don't fit in. I remember when I first got into recovery, you know, there I was. I was angry and belligerent and a know-it-all. And they told me to clean out the ashtrays and take out the trash. And I said, I don't want to do that. And they said, well, then you don't want to stay sober, you know. And I didn't like that being humbled. But, you know, I started cleaning out the ashtrays and taking out the trash. And then one day I came into a meeting and somebody else was doing it. And I was mad that they took my job. And they said, well, you're moving up to the coffee bar now. You get to empty the coffee grinds and make the coffee. But, you know, it's so critical for me to be connected and to be a part of it. If you really want this thing fully, it's really about immersing yourself completely in it. You know, it's about becoming connected and jumping in with both feet. If you really want the abundant recovery, John 10:10, and everybody says, you know, he came to give us life and bring it more, you know, give us life abundantly, more abundantly, you know. That's a great verse, but the first half of the verse says the thief comes to kill, steal, and destroy. And guys, the thief is my disease. It's me. You know, it's that hunger, that lust, that passion I have to please me. And for me, it was real important to have, you know, quite a few more than just one or two meetings a week. You know, I'm connected. I still go to meetings at my home group. I love my AA group because I walk in and I talk about Jesus and they slam me and I say, thank you for the blessing. Because, you know, at the end of the Beatitudes, it said, blessed are you when people despise you and mock you and persecute you on account of me. What does that one end with, Paul? Theirs is the kingdom of heaven. So it's counted as a blessing over and over. It talks about in James, count all the trials as blessings. Three or four more meetings a week. I've been sober for 14 years, and I do probably an average of four meetings a week. Some weeks I do three, some weeks I do five, or six. Another sponsor or accountability partner. But what's really cool is in my phone today, I bet you I have about 200 numbers of people who are in recovery, and they're no longer just people I know from recovery, they're friends. They're people I hang out with. They're people that I, what do we do this weekend, Randy? We did another friend of mine that I sponsored. We went and ran a 15-mile kayak race, and hung out together. And other friends that came out and helped support. You build lifelong friends, and it's so hard to change that on my own. It's so hard for me to say I'm not going to hang out with the people I was comfortable with. About getting outside of my comfort zones is a real difficult thing for us. And my comfort zone was to hang out with people who partied and acted like I did. My comfort zone was to be with people who thought and did the things that I did. So coming into somewhere and talking about God and getting a sponsor and examining, my behavior and getting honest, that was way outside of my comfort zone. But it was what I had to do for this process to work. There's all kinds of other things that can increase your recovery. A couple of workshops, retreats or conventions a year are wonderful. Paul does one. How many retreats do you do that are recovery-based? Either like two or three? Okay. And then other ones for counseling sessions. There's some huge conferences, get-togethers, and other tools. The Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous is the original text for the 12 steps, and this is really awesome. And almost every 12-step group uses this, and it's sort of like having the original text. Whatever you're doing, you can see mine's kind of been used a little bit and marked up and everything. It gives me so much insight, and wherever if you get this book and you're like, well, you know what? I mean, my problem's spending. How's this going to help me? If you substitute everywhere it says for drinking, I went out shopping, or that bitter, incomprehensible demoralization that comes when all my checks bounce and the bank takes my last penny. You can relate, believe me, if you just give it a little effort. There's a whole bunch of other cool stuff. We've got some of these programs as Cross Ties is something that Dr. Looney wrote, which is the Beatitudes for Every Believer based on the 12 steps. This is really digging deep. Search for Significance is an awesome one. From Dr. Robert McGee, who was the founder of Rafa, and it's just very introspective and really closely related to the 12 steps. The steps are on the right-hand side there, too. But, what can you, you might say, well, what can I expect? You're talking about coming in here and, doing this work and getting a sponsor and doing all these meetings. The promises are what the book tells us that we can expect from working the steps. Who wouldn't want those things? That's what I was looking for when I was drinking and using. I could sit there and drink and I would feel freedom and happy for a little while. I'd get that instant gratification, probably like Esau did when he took those first three bites of stew. But can you imagine what he thought once that bowl was gone? Not to regret the past. Oh my gosh, man, my past was so dark and so, terrible and so, shameful that, I never thought I wouldn't regret my past, or at least part of my past. And that's true for me today. To comprehend the word serenity and to know peace. I live life like 100 miles an hour. And to see how our experience can benefit others. I love how number two and number five go together. Henry Ford once said, and you know, this is one of the, at the time, one of the wealthiest men in the world. He said, the only thing that counts of supreme value in this world is experience. Now think about that. If, you know, a homeless guy under the bridge had said that, you'd probably go, yeah, right. I can see that. I can see your point of view on that. But here's a guy who had everything. You know, he had all the money, he had all the power and all the prestige, and he said, the only thing of immense value in the world is your experience. Feeling of uselessness and self-pity will disappear. We will lose interest in selfish things and gain interest in our fellows. You know, I thought that meant I was going to become Mother Teresa and a do-gooder, you know, and what I discovered, and I heard it today, one of my favorite verses is Philippians 4, 11 through 13, I've found the secret to being content in every situation, whether having plenty or being in want. I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. Well, I think what Paul was saying in the 4:11, Philippians 4:11, where he said, I found the secret to being content in every situation, is a spirit of generosity. When I get out of me and I become of service and benefit to others, then I stop, you know, I stop feeling self-pity and useless. Self-seeking will slip away. Attitude and outlook change. Wow, did I need an attitude adjustment? I don't know if any of y'all can relate to that. Number 10 was huge. Fear of people and economic insecurity will leave us. You know, when I first read that, I thought it meant I was going to not have any money problems ever again. It turns out it didn't say that. Intuitively know how to handle situations which used to baffle us. And then the last one is so important, suddenly realize that God is doing for us what we could not do for ourselves. Now, if you're brand new here and you're like, you know, you're kicking the tires on 12-step recovery and you're like, phew, you're talking, this sounds like an Amway sales job, man. You know, I don't think this is real. I don't think you can get those things from doing this. You know, it sounds like a snow job. I'd ask the guys that have worked the steps and have either all or some or even just a few of these promises to stand up. These are the people who've actually done this work and can attest that this works. You know, and, you know, it's not a, it might work for you. It's a theory. Maybe, you know, maybe it'll work for you. I mean, how many of y'all ever heard anybody say, I tried AA and it didn't work. You ever heard that? I tried Al-Anon and it didn't work. You know, I tried doing that and it didn't work. You know, I believe that if you follow these things, if you do these things as they're laid out, you know, the result will be a life change. But it's just like those advertisements on TV. You're not gonna lose 40 pounds and get ripped buff like a bodybuilder, you know, by doing, you know, 6 minutes a day, you know, three times a week. It just doesn't work that way. But it's like anything. It's the amount of effort you put into it, you get out of it. And, you know, it's kind of, and this is kind of a dry, kind of a rough teaching, you know, but this is, you know, where we're at. We're about to start the step studies. You know, and if you're committed, if you're sick of the way you're living, if you're tired of things in your life that you can't overcome, you know, if it's just you're putting that happy face on and saying, you know, I'm fine and everything's great, but inside you're dying because you got something that's just killing you, you know, this will change your life. And it's changed the lives of the people who had the courage to do it and the ones that you just saw stand up. But anyway, I want to thank you all for letting me come up here and kind of ramble and being my guinea pigs. It was fun. It was a little nerve-wracking. I forgot to pray for God to take my ego away, so it probably didn't go as smoothly as it could. But thank you all very much.